Hello and welcome to So You Think You Can Fanon. Please check the link tree in the description and see all of our beautiful, lovely, salacious links to listen to more. Thank you.
All right, guys. Welcome back to the All Guardsmen Party. Today we're going to be opening the episode with one simple question. Fuck, marry, kill. Mortarion, Trazen the Infinite, and Gazgul.
Let's see. Let's kill Mortarion. Let's marry Gazgul and fuck Thraxen. I never heard of that guy.
He's a Necron collector.
Yeah, I think that works out. I like that.
I think that I would marry Gazgul, fuck Trazen, and kill Mortarion.
Nice.
It's crazy that you're not fucking Mortarion, considering he's the only one that's like fuckable, like quite literally fuckable.
But he's stinky and diseased.
Stinky. I'm not sticking my dick in that.
That's true. He would give you
because like so Trazen could just like make like a robo pussy.
He would. That's a good point. He would give you so many STDs. Yeah. Okay. Fuck Trazen. Marry Gazgul. Kill Mori.
That's a pretty self-explanatory one, honestly. Once you start thinking about it.
Plus, I think
Trazen doesn't like literally suck your soul out of your penis.
I think also you could orcs would be good husbands because if you just gaslit all of their friends into thinking that they were a better husband, they would get better.
Maybe. I don't know if that's how the Wog field works. Can you mind control orcs through other orcs?
Well, you can give them other feats. Like there was an orc who could breathe fire because everybody around him in his local war band believed he could. So you just go to his friends and you just gaslight them into being like, oh yeah, he delivers me flowers every day, and they're like, yeah, Git Stomper delivers Mary flowers every single day, and he just starts doing that.
That's really
funny. I think it's worth noting that Gazgul is a passionate lover.
How do we know
this canon?
I mean, no, but we can infer it.
He probably is.
He is the biggest and the strongest.
The way that he treats Yarik is like a passionate lover. Like he treats him so kindly. He's the only human he doesn't murder. He learned High Gothic specifically to speak to him.
That's crazy.
There's a part in I don't remember which book it is, but there's a book where there's an excerpt where it's like from Yarik's perspective, and he's like, at this moment, Gazgul spoke to me. He did not speak to me in Orcish or in broken low Gothic. No, he spoke to me in High Gothic. And then Gazgul's like, that was one of the greatest fights I've ever had in all my years. I'm going to send you back to Armageddon now so you can prepare for an even greater fight. And he just lets him go.
Remember when they announced that Yarik died and then they never elaborated or expanded on that?
I'm pretty sure Yarik is back.
He can't die. It's impossible.
Because it at least on the Warhammer Wiki, it reports what I remember happening is that they announced that he died, didn't give a date of death, and then they didn't, to my knowledge, they didn't do anything with that.
Isn't Yarik basically immortal because of the orcs' respect for him?
I don't know if that's ever been confirmed. I know that's like a fan theory, that he's like basically even more capable because of the orcs, but I'm assuming something could potentially get them. It looks like they announced new Yarik models in 2023. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't look like there's any, new story stuff with him.
I doubt they're gonna keep him dead.
That seems unlikely, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure he's just MIA and is just reported dead, and there's something going on.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, Yarik's not in this. Gazgul's not in this. Nora, Thrazen, or Mortarion. Who is in this? It's Sergeant time, I think.
I think we should write down every different way Matt has said Trazen in the last 5 minutes.
Trazen.
Thrazen.
Thracian.
Thracian.
Raisin. He's a Raisin. There we go. I'm sticking with Raisin.
That does remind me of a funny anecdote I saw earlier about how on his deathbed, the philosopher Plato was being played a flute by like his like Thracian barbarian GF, and like I think he had been like what do you call it, like not moving and very like quiet like the whole, because he was dying, you know, he was sick.
Yeah, bummer.
But like she started playing and he turns over and goes, "That's the worst flute playing I've ever heard in my life," and then he died like a few minutes later.
Damn,
that's powerful. That fucking
sucks.
That's true hater.
Alrighty.
turn that shit off now.
Who wants to start
this? Thank you.
All Guardsmen party history.
We'll go in Zencastr order. We'll go Surge. Right, I guess I'm going Surge, Matt, me. Sound good?
How did you guess my Zencastr order? Well, I guess it's not
the order
that hard
which
to guess
everybody joined.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. All right, kick us off, man.
All right. So no shit, there we were, delivering the live Zoanthrope we'd hauled halfway across the galaxy, when instead of thanking us for our hard work and offering to buy us all a beer, the Inquisitor running the facility placed us under arrest. There ain't no fucking justice. We all stood there, paralyzed, at the news that our boss, Inquisitor Oak, had been branded a rogue, a traitor to the Inquisition. The mere fact that we were his subordinates damned us in the eyes of the Inquisition. To make matters even worse, we were apparently on the hook for just about everything we'd done since the start of our mission, as well as a few things we hadn't. Not that it really mattered that what we had or hadn't done, since the motto of the Inquisitorial Courts as a plea of innocence is guilty of wasting our time. It slowly dawned on each of us that unless something amazingly unexpected happened, our future would consist of a quick trial and execution, if we were lucky, that is. We were unlucky, it'd be a long trial and a longer execution. Perhaps inevitably, Nubby was the first one to come to grips with the situation. And before the Inquisitor had even finished telling his two Death Watch Space Marine bodyguards to kill us if we attempted to do anything, the little trooper was volunteering to testify against Oak in exchange for clemency, and possibly a small cash payment. The Inquisitor responded to this outburst by briefly turning his unnervingly steady gaze to the cretinous little trooper, who suddenly forgot how to speak mid-sellout. After a few vague ahhing sound, Nubby sat down, gripping his head with one hand and making rude gestures at the Inquisitor with the other.
The Inquisitor dropped Nubby from his attention and finished the Marine's orders with an apology for the indignity of the assignment and a promise to call an extra team down to properly arrest us when his ship returned in a few hours. Then, almost as an afterthought, he warned them that the little one is a psyker and will need to be put in one of the cells. Both the Marines turned their bolters on Nubby and began advancing. There was a bit of confusion as Nubby, who was still incapable of speaking, attempted to hide behind the rest of us. Sarge, seeing an opportunity, grabbed the undersized trooper by his collar and proffered him to the advancing Marines, while Amy and Doc moved in front of the Fumbles. Unfortunately, this brilliant plan was spoiled by the fact that the Inquisitor wasn't a gullible idiot. When the Marines returned with Nubby suspended by one augmetic leg, the Inquisitor let out a little sigh of annoyance, which was the most emotion we'd seen from him yet, and told the Marines to stop embarrassing themselves and collect the one in the psyker coat. When the Marines returned with Doc, who'd hurriedly put on Fumble's coat, the Inquisitor let out another sigh and made a gesture. There was a little yelp from the back of our group as an invisible force yanked Fumbles into the air and began levitating him across the landing pad. Without another word to us or the Death Watch Marines, the Inquisitor followed our whimpering psyker into the large elevator where his non-superhuman flunkies were waiting with the Demonthrope.
The elevator's doors slid shut behind Fumbles and the Inquisitor with an ominous boom, leaving our landing party alone on the pad with the two Death Watch Marines. After a few seconds of awkward silence, Amy pointed out that the Inquisitor was a colossal asshole. One of the Marines agreed with a vaguely agreeable grunt, earning him an angry look from his partner. All looks are angry in power armor. The pissier of the two Marines tossed Doc in our general direction, and then both of them trained their weapons on our little group and settled into comfortable guard stances, All around the pad, the AA guns that defended the facility came to life and turned turned to rest on our shuttle well. We may have not been cuffed, placed in cells, or even properly disarmed yet, but all in all, it was very clear that we wouldn't be going anywhere. Unless somebody did something suicidally stupid, that is. Hopefully it wouldn't have to be us. The All Guardsmen Party and the
Redacted
Conspiracy.
So, to summarize our situation, we were sweating through our fancy but completely unarmored uniforms on a landing pad while two bolter-armed Death Watch Space Marines kept us covered and watched our every movement like genetically engineered superhawks. Since Fumbles was off enjoying the hospitality of the creepily monotone Inquisitor, our landing party consisted of all of us guardsmen, the three adepts, and a very unhappy Jim. Armament-wise, none of us except Twitch and Nubby, who had a few party favors crammed into their pockets, were armed with more than our las pistols. We hadn't just left our pulse weapons behind, mind you. We just decided to leave them in the shuttle, where their techno-heretical nature wouldn't cause any problems. The Inquisitor running the facility had a rod up his ass. In retrospect, we might have underestimated the size of the hypothetical rod. Our weapon-filled shuttle was parked a dozen meters away from the Space Marines that corralled us. Aside from our cache of weapons, it was equipped with a multi-laser turret, which only Jim knew how to use. Maybe enough armor to hold off bolter fire, if the Marines had made sure to miss the half-acidly patched Brightlands holes, and maybe enough fuel to get us back into orbit. Oh, and Head Sergeant Gravis's stasis unit. We didn't really see that as tactically significant. The facility we were on top of was your standard secret mountain base affair. You know, a landing pad and a bit of rooftop sticking out of a dangerously steep mountainside, with Emperor knows how much stuff hidden underground. Its only real distinguishing features, as far as we were concerned at least, were the local climate, which was blisteringly hot despite the altitude, and the massive ring of anti-air turrets under the landing pad. We weren't really sure who was controlling said turrets or what their reaction time was like, but none of us felt like doing any experiments to figure that out.
After our feeble plan to hold on to Fumbles had fallen apart, and we'd spent a few minutes stewing in our own juices in the landing pad, the true shittiness of the situation began to really sink in. Amy started cursing under her breath and steadily increased the volume until she was ranting like a street corner preacher. Nubby propped his oversized coat up as a sunshade. No poles were used. The thing was actually filthy enough to stand up on its own, and that was after it had been washed, and grumpily sat underneath it, waiting for his voice to return and egging Amy on as best he could with grunts and gestures. Sarge just stood stock still, muttering darkly to himself and ignoring everything else, even when Doc tried to ask him for help subduing Twitch, who started pacing in circles and ranting about how, "I knew it all along, they're all in on it!" Really, Tank and Doc were the ones who took it best. After an initial freakout, the medic took refuge in the familiar, if difficult, task of tranking Twitch before he did anything explodey. Tank spent a few minutes smugly pointing out that while we had been arrested by the Inquisition, it hadn't been for tech heresy, and therefore everyone owed him an apology. He eventually realized no one was listening and decided to sit down and play with his drone controller instead. There was a tense moment as he drew the controller from his tech belt, but the Marines eventually accepted Tink's blatant lie about it just being a data slate and didn't shoot him. As for the rest of the party, Jim sank down into a little puddle of misery, chattering to himself in binary and rocking back and forth, and the adepts all gathered into a little huddle. After a few minutes of very serious discussion, the old diplomacy adept turned to the rest of us, cleared his throat until we grudgingly paid attention to him, and asked us whether we thought Oak had actually turned traitor. He seemed surprised by how little we cared.
I mean, it's not like we had thought the question of whether or not our boss was a heretical mastermind that had been destroying the Inquisition from within wasn't important. We just didn't see how it was relevant to our current situation. I mean, either A, Oak was a heretic, in which case the Inquisition would imprison, torture, and slowly kill us, or B, Oak wasn't a heretic, but someone had framed him as one, in which case the Inquisition would probably imprison, torture, and slowly kill us. Though they might apologize to Oak about it afterwards, if everything was ever sorted out. Or C, Oak wasn't a heretic, and the monotone Inquisitor was lying about the Inquisition ordering his arrest as part of some sort of conspiracy. In which case a bunch of political backstabbers or a shadowy cabal of heretics would imprison, torture, and slowly kill us. I'm sure you can see the common theme. As far as we were concerned, the question of our Inquisitor's moral status was academic, and was therefore something that could be left to the academics while we focused on more important issues. Specifically, how we were going to avoid being imprisoned, tortured, and slowly killed. The old diplomat got a little huffy with us and said some very hurtful things about our attention spans and our intellectual capabilities as compared to those of a bunch of drunken orcs. Eventually, though, he calmed down and announces his and the other adept certainty that Oak was innocent. Sarge, who was just in about the worst mood any of us had ever seen him in, responded with bitter sarcasm, which the diplomat returned with interest. The situation had the makings of a really good argument, and lacking anything better to do, we all gathered around to watch the fireworks. But then Tink spoiled everything by asking whether we should tell the Inquisitor everything about the Zoanthrope before he finished taking it out of the stasis unit.
Well, you better believe that caught everyone's attention, including the two Death Watch Marines, who could apparently hear everything we were saying. The less pissy of the two Marines, whose only distinguishing feature was a yellow-edged pauldron with a cartoon heart on it, took a few steps towards us. This paused when he realized his companion wasn't moving. The other Space Marine, who sported a sort of pointy black cross on a white background, just shook his head, and the Heart Marine sheepishly shuffled back into his guard position as we huddled around Tink's drone controller. Spot, the Wonder Drone, had been incorporated into the Demonthrope's containment unit when we made the thing mobile, partially because the drone was really good as a central controller for various systems as anything we had on hand, mostly because Fio really wanted to keep the hunk of Wraithbone, which suppressed a lion's share of the Demonthrope's power. The Wraithbone suppressor had been positioned on the very top of the Demonthrope's pallet, while its cables and stuff hanging down over the outside of the stasis unit, where they conveniently held the Demonthrope's smoky wings for anyone who didn't know where to look for them. Spot had been encased in this oversized servo skull disguise and placed on top of the suppressor, where the drone could easily lift the whole thing off and bring it back with us after the Inquisition had set up where they used to contain uppity demon hosts. Anyway, thanks to all this, we had a clear readout telling us that the Demonthrope's pallet was just 100 meters below us, and its containment measures were being deactivated by someone who probably didn't know it held something just a bit nastier than your average Zoanthrope. The question whether or not we should try to warn them, let them figure things out for themselves, or maybe help things along a little by pushing the big red button on Tink's drone controller.
The debate over what to do about the Demonthrope was a very awkward one. I mean, you can't just say stuff like, I think we should use this device right here to unleash the demon host we brought with us and then escape in the resulting confusion in front of a pair of Death Watch Space Marines. It would be rude. Also, they would shoot at us. So we had to be careful not to say anything about the demon or Spot or escaping or anything even remotely related to whatever the fuck we were talking about. Now, if we'd been proper inquisitorial agents, we'd have used witty metaphors and ironic code words, possibly leaving the Marines with the impression that we were merely planning a fancy dress party or something. Unfortunately, we were just a bunch of guardsmen, and we had to make do with grunts, shrugs, expletives, and a wide array of rude gestures. Judging by the looks on Jim and the Adept's faces, we wound up looking like a bunch of ogrins trying to argue philosophy, but it honestly worked pretty well. Who knows what the Marines thought? Maybe that we'd all suffered strokes or something. Anyway, skipping over a whole lot of nigh incomprehensible arguing, we eventually decided that the odds of us surviving the demon throw breaking loose were even worse than what we'd get in an inquisitorial trial. Unless, that is, the bug only broke partway out and they pinned smuggling a demon host into an inquisitorial facility on us along with everything else. Put together, it was enough to convince Sarge that our best option was to fess up to the demon Thrope's true nature, and hope we get bonus points for saving whichever idiot was in the process of releasing the damn thing. That decided, Sarge stood up, walked towards the Marines until they ordered him to stop or be shot full of holes, told them that Zoanthrope we delivered had been possessed by a demon, and I'm warning you, don't open the fucking containment. The Heart Marine called Sarge a liar, and the Grumpy Marine called him a heretic.
Sarge made three more attempts to convince the Death Watch Marines, but the closest he got to success was briefly arguing with Heart Marine over whether or not a Tyranid could be possessed by a demon. That ended with the Marine calling Sarge an idiot for trying to lie about Tyranid biology to someone who'd fought them for three decades, and Sarge giving up the argument in disgust. After the failure and operating in pure desperation at this point, our fearless leader decided to just see if offering the raw facts to the Marines would work. He called Tink over to show them the readouts from the Demonthrope pallet. This resulted in the Space Marines calling the Inquisitor to tell him that we had some sort of a remote connection to the pallet, and Spot's signal being jammed. The whole time this is going on, the Diplomacy Adept just stood there, shaking his head and running an increasingly bitter play-by-play critique under his breath. When it finally ended with Sergeant Tink both vowing to just stand there and laugh while demonic bugs killed the Marines, the old diplomat walked out to Sarge and congratulated him on having learned absolutely nothing during his month of diplomatic tutoring sessions. Sarge suggested that the Adept go talk to the Marines himself if he was so smart, and he got told he should have thought of that before cramming his foot so far in his mouth that he'd started shitting toes. After the shocked pause that remark triggered, Doc asked if he could have a turn. Both Sarge and the Diplomacy Adept told him they don't care anymore.
So while Sarge and the old diplomat glared at each other, the rest of us began laying plans for taking advantage of the inevitable demon throat escape. Doc walked over to the two Death Watch Marines and tried to convince them they totally weren't heretics. Between the fact that Doc was just about the opposite of a confident, persuasive speaker, the Death Watch Marines being a pair of 3-meter-tall killing machines with glowing red eyes and permanent expressions of angry disapproval, the whole thing was comically pathetic. Our medic stammered and nervously giggled his way through an explanation of how he had no idea what was going on with our Inquisitor or what sort of experiments were going on in this facility. We had just been following what we had at the time, been a perfectly legitimate inquisitorial order, like a bunch of good little guardsmen, and then our astropath had exploded, and every time we tried to get a new one, people attacked us. We had no other option aside from following our original orders and so on. The whole time, the Marines just stared at him, as if eyeing a small, furiously yapping dog and debating whether or not to laugh at it or punt it into the horizon. Doc finally began to run out of steam when he got to the part with the space station, because there was no denying we'd shot, exploded, and melted a bunch of loyal Imperial subjects. It is something that's sort of hard to wave off as just an accident, even if it totally was. Also, there's no way to explain the whole thing with the warp fungus without sounding either like a liar or a madman. He stuttered to a stop, stared at the impassive space mage for a few seconds, then a burst of sudden confidence announced that at least we definitely hadn't murdered any space marines. In fact, except for the one that had gotten skewered by the hive tyrant, all of them were still alive, and he could prove it since Sergeant Gravis was still in our shuttle.
Upon hearing Doc's statement, Heart Marine rocked forwards a step, paused for a few seconds to have an inaudible argument with his partner, and then finally told the medic to show him Gravis. A minute later, they came back out, collected the still-freaking-out Jim, and then wheeled Gravis's stasis unit out onto the landing pad. As the two Death Watch Marines huddled over the stasis chamber and inspected what was left of its occupant, we felt a sudden surge of hope that we could convince them to at least keep the Inquisitor from releasing the Demonthrope. Then Grumpy Marine spun around, shoved his bolter right in Doc's face, and asked why Gravis was imprisoned in a stasis field and what sort of heretical experiment had been planned for him in this facility. Doc didn't wet himself in terror, but it was very close. Not being a good bullshitter, our medic-turned-diplomat fell back on the only thing he was certain of, the exact, precise, anatomical details of Gravis's injuries and subsequent treatments. The two Death Watch Marines seemed rather taken aback by the sudden tide of completely incomprehensible technical medical jargon, and after a few more seconds of glowering, they stepped back into their impassive guard positions. Doc, having no idea whether this meant they were listening or not, kept on babbling while the rest of us watched and grew more and more antsy. Luckily, before any of us ran out of patience and did something to screw everything up again, the third Death Watch Marine arrived. This Marine was different from the other two. In addition to the colorful shoulder badge, blue with a comet on it, his black armor was decorated with white bits, and he was carrying what even us uneducated dumbass guardsmen could recognize as apothecary tools. He came out of the base's elevator at a dead sprint, skidded to a stop in front of Gravis's stasis unit, and began bellowing questions at Doc.
As Doc finished his explanation a second time, the apothecary turned to the other two Marines, and the three of them began arguing. They were using their helmet comms, so we couldn't hear a word of it, of course, but it was obviously a very heated argument, and since we had a lot on the line, and were bored, we decided to see if we couldn't listen in. Approximately half a second after Tank managed to get his drone controller tuned to the comm frequency, and had started working at cracking it, all three Marines turned to face us, and Jim sprinted over. The tech priest yanked Tink's controller away and suggested that if we wanted to die, shooting ourselves would be a far more pleasant way to go than getting caught in a half-assed attempt at etheric warfare. Tink eventually got his controller back, but only because Sarge promised not to let him use it anymore. Anyways, the Space Marines resumed their argument after that little hiccup, and after a few minutes of agonizing waiting, seriously, it had been about 20 minutes since we received the warning about the Demonthrope's containment being disabled, they apparently reached a decision. The apothecary announced his intention to temporarily revive Gravis and obtain testimony from him. Doc asked how this was possible. Gravis's lungs, being rather non-functional, see cut in half, in addition to being the whole comatose thing. He told us to stop asking questions and be ready to assist if needed. Doc had a few questions to swell with pride at the thought of assisting an actual apothecary in treatment, and then was nearly crushed as the Space Marine began unloading 100 kilos of oversized medical equipment onto him. Everything was laid out. Doc was sprayed with an Astartes-grade disinfectant, which didn't quite cause him to run screaming in unbearable pain, and the stasis unit was deactivated.
First part of Gravis' revival went as how you'd expect a medical operation being carried out by a centuries-old superhuman to go. After Doc spent something about a month talking about how great a surgeon the apothecary was, how amazing all the little medical toys he used were, what an honor it would be to allow to observe and assist in such an operation. Even if all he'd been allowed to do was hold a few things, one of which he very nearly dropped, and dispose of a few vials of biotoxin, which, lacking a biohazard disposal bin, he just threw off the landing pad. Anyway, in a startlingly short amount of time, Gravis had been injected, implanted, drained, and a dozen other medical things. And then the apothecary deftly popped the torsoified Space Marine out of the power armor, which had kept him alive for so long. I can't really say what we expected the next step of the process to be. Perhaps something involving some sort of superpowered stimulants and blink twice for yes or something. In any case, we certainly hadn't expected the apothecary to pull out a length of cable, jack one end into his helmet and the other one into those weird black sockets on Gravis' spine. After there was a very anticlimactic 2 or 3 minutes of watching the apothecary and Gravis doing nothing, and then the cable was detached. Doc was told to clean up and re-engage the stasis field, and the apothecary went back to arguing with the other two Death Watch Marines. Once again, we stood around like a bunch of piss ants, watching a conversation we couldn't hear. But at least it was more interesting to watch this time. Their last argument was heated. This one was practically molten. The Marines were actually yelling loud enough for us to hear the occasional word through their helmets. There was a lot of gesturing going on. The Heart Marine seemed especially furious about something we really hoped wasn't us.
When the Marines' argument finally ended, with Heart Marines storming off towards the base's elevator, and the apothecary returning to pick up his medical gear, Doc decided to see if he was actually allowed to ask questions now. It turned out that either the apothecary was a far friendlier Space Marine than any other one we'd met at any point in our journey, or, just maybe, Gravis had said something on Doc's behalf. Either way, we were finally given a rundown of what the fuck was going on. Sergeant Gravis had testified. No, we would not be told how collecting said testimony had worked, because the mysteries of the Black Carapace were not for us to know. No, not even though it turned out that we were completely innocent. What part of not for us to know did we not understand? No, the secret wasn't that all Space Marines were actually psychic, and our questions' privileges would be revoked if we did not ask about something else. Gravis had said we were a bunch of dangerous incompetents, but probably not heretics, and had backed us up in regard to the dangerousness of the demonthrope, if not the demonness. The Inquisitor had been informed of this, but had been dubious about the reliability of Gravis' testimony. After a debate, the Inquisitor and the Marines had decided that the Demonthrope would be immediately destroyed. Heart Marine was going down to observe the procedure, purely for reasons of protocol, of course.
I'm sure that
the news that they were just going to kill the literally damned bug, after we'd spent all that time and effort hauling it across the ass end of the Imperium, did not go over well. I mean, we probably should have just been happy, since it was supposed to be used as evidence of our crimes or something, but still.
I'm sure sending the Lamenter down to watch the execution of the Demonthrope is a great idea.
That'll go wonderfully. It won't cause any problems at all.
Anyway, Sarge made a spirited attempt to convince the Marines that a Demonthrope containment unit would work just fine if it was left alone. He was told that the Zoanthrope was an abomination in the eyes of the Emperor, and destruction was the only truly safe option. Twitch, who was coming back into focus after being tranked, loudly agreed with that sentiment and was told that he was not being very helpful. It then occurred to Tank that it would be very hard to kill the Demonthrope without removing it from the containment unit. He asked the apothecary about this and was told that standard procedure was to shove the whole thing into a plasma incinerator. Tank asked what would happen to Spot, got asked who Spot was, and got as far as before Amy and Nubby both grabbed him. The apothecary accepted Amy's explanation that he named the containment unit Spot. He's weird like that, without comment. It was at that point, as Tank was being dragged away from the Marine and quietly being told that Fio could build him a new damn drone if we got out of this alive, that a familiar, horribly familiar, chittery, scratching sensation went through all of our heads. Veteran bug wranglers that we immediately recognized the psychic screech as a sign of partial containment failure on the Demonthrope. At least we figured it was partial, you know, on the account of how there weren't any bugs coming out of the walls. Sarge immediately informed the two confused Space Marines of the situation, abandoning all pretenses of diplomacy, and demanded to know what the hell their boss was playing at.